Welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look at stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Christopher Husted. For a long time, Texas was the center of cattle country, but drought is reshaping the beef map and raising the price of steak. Ranchers are moving their herds from California to Colorado and from Texas to Nebraska by the thousands. They're seeking refuge from dry weather, and as Grant Gerlach reports, cattle producers in the Midwest are making the most of a changing environment.
Drought in the South has the cattle industry looking north. In fact, this year, for the first time, Nebraska passed Texas as the top cattle feeding state in the country.
This is the garden spot for it, to feed cattle. I'm one of the lucky ones that I found it.
Terry Van Housen feeds cattle near Stromsburg in eastern Nebraska. His feed yard has 2 miles of concrete bunks. 8,000 animals are lined up, piling on the pounds. These calves started on pastures scattered throughout the region. This is their last stop before heading for the slaughterhouse.
When the motel is full, like a feed yard or a packing plant are going full blast, that's when they make money. But if you can't keep the motel full, then that's when the profits go down.
If Nebraska's cattle motels have fewer vacancies these days, it's largely because ranchers in the southern plains have emptied out parched pastures, waiting for a rainy day. Daryl Peel is a livestock marketing specialist at Oklahoma State University.
You know, western Oklahoma, the panhandle of Texas, and in fact much of West Texas, and much of New Mexico are still in extremely severe drought. There's been very little relief, really, since the fall of 2010.
When rainstorms hit southwest Oklahoma over the Memorial Day weekend, it was the first time in 4 years rancher Cody Goodnight remembers seeing more than an inch of rain fall at once. Goodnight says it went straight into the soil.
You know, it's hard to get runoff when you got cracks in the ground that are 2 inches wide.
But one good rain can't wipe out a four-year dry spell. Goodnight would normally run around 1,000 calves on his native prairie pastures. Over the past 4 years, he hasn't had the grass or water to graze more than half that.
There's certainly some bigger ponds that have never been dry that are dry now. You know, my dad built a lot of the ponds back in the 50s and 60s, and he'd never seen them dry.
Ponds are drying up, and herds are shrinking in Oklahoma and Texas. And that's important if you ever buy steaks or hamburger to throw on the grill. Low cattle numbers are a big reason meat prices are so high. But Daryl Peel at Oklahoma State says that's been a long time coming.
The drought the last 3 years has been the last straw, if you will, of a long series of events. The U.S. beef cow herd has been downsizing for 16 of the last 18 years.
But the bottom dropped out when the drought hit Texas in 2011. Since then, the U.S. cattle herd has shrunk by 1.8 million head, or 6%. Those losses are concentrated in Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico. Meanwhile, northern states like Nebraska, Iowa, and the Dakotas have seen their herds grow, even though many pastures have been plowed up to raise corn. Peel says it's part of a larger structural change in the beef industry.
It favors cattle feeding in the Midwest and less so in the southern plains. It also favors less cow-calf production in the Midwest and moving the cow herd proportionately back to the central plains and the western part of the U.S.
Peel says even after the grass is green again in Texas, Nebraska is likely to hold on to the cattle feeding crown it gained this year. So why are more cattle heading north for supper? A feed truck rolls by, dumping feed into the bunks at the Van Housen feedlot in Nebraska. They mix 22 loads a day, nearly 200 tons of feed, and it's what's in that feed that gives Nebraska an edge.
Come right out of the plant.
Terry Van Housen takes me to the feed pit to show me a fresh pile of wet distiller's grain, corn that's been run through a nearby ethanol plant. I pick up a dull yellow clump, and it's moist and still warm.
You can eat it if you want, but it's awful bitter.
It kind of sticks together.
Yeah. You can throw that glob on the fender of your car and it'll still be there when you get to Lincoln.
These leftovers of corn ethanol production are the key to Nebraska's new position at the front of the cattle feeding industry. Ethanol plants consume huge amounts of corn, but they also put out distiller's grains that can be used as inexpensive feed.
So that's a big deal. See, a lot of this stuff, if you fed in Texas, it'd have to come from here.
And as Van Housen says, it's cheaper to take the cattle to the feed than take the feed to the cattle. Grant Gerlach, Harvest Public Media.
For years, medical researchers have been searching for a way to study the effectiveness of stem cell therapies without testing them on humans. But it's difficult, and many problems pop up, including the fact that many animals reject the stem cell grafts or transplants. MU researchers R. Michael Roberts and Randall S. Prather believe they found the answer. The two have collaborated to create a genetically modified pig with an immune system that doesn't allow rejection. KBIA's Ashley Reese sat down with the two researchers to discuss how these genetically modified pigs and this study will help further the research on stem cell therapy.
So how did you guys create an immune system in these pigs that keeps the stem cells from being rejected?
The easy answer is we genetically engineered them so that they cannot make any new antibodies. So they have an innate immune system, and that's still functioning. But to create an antibody to some new pathogen or some new antigen or some new disease, they just can't create any new antibodies.
Rather than create a new immune system, we actually depleted the immune system of certain pathways. And as you said, this is an immune system, the part of the immune system that produces antibodies and also the kind of T cells, which are a type of lymphocyte that would attack the graft.
Now that you've done a study where stem cells aren't rejected by pigs, how much more needs to be done before it can get to the point where this can be applied to humans?
Well, I think you're asking a couple different questions. One question is, how can the pig be used? And the other question is, how can the stem cells be used? And the pig's available, and people can use it. In fact, we've had requests literally from around the world to be able to have access to these animals to develop whatever stem cell therapy that people are trying to put into place so that they can treat certain human ailments. So I said we created the animals, but you also have to understand is once these founder animals are created, you don't have to go through that process anymore. You can just use natural breeding to propagate that genetic mutation into additional animals that can be used for research.
That was KBIA's Ashley Reese talking with researchers R. Michael Roberts and Randall S. Prather. That's a wrap for this week's Under the Microscope. I'm Christopher Husted. Thanks for listening.